Good book.
But
good book.
Just good.
Shoots him out of there. I'm going, oh, that's cinematic. That's cinema, bro. Probably the lowest Sanderson book I've ever rated on the channel. Everything connects in a way, and I feel like book three is going to make this connect even more. She's overhated.
Oh, yeah. I do not get the hate. She is my favorite Stormlight character. Lift is the best Stormlight character.
Lift in the cathedral. Rich might bust.
Welcome everyone to the Tudor Realm podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about book two, The Well of Ascension, Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson.
This is one of those series people are tuning in for. It's one of the big ones. People love Mistborn. I was new. I called myself a Brandon Sanderson fan.
Finally, fake fan.
Finally read book one. On to book two. We're going to spoil book one a bit in the beginning here. So we're going to do spoiler free for book two. However,
full spoilers for book one.
Yes.
No spoilers. Spoiler free for book two for the first 10-ish minutes.
Yes. If you guys want to be convinced to read Mistborn, check out our video where we talked about Mistborn, because we're now going to catch up. We're coming back from reading The Final Empire, book one. Do you know where we left off with Mistborn? Do you remember the end of the book? What happened? And what are we getting into? Set the tone. Set the scene.
Longer for me. You give it to us.
Okay.
You have more.
We should mention this.
I should mention.
Yes.
I was so embarrassed by my performance and memory on our Mistborn review that I was like, all right, I messed things up. I got to read it. So I actually have reread The Well of Ascension here. I'm up to date. I finished reading it like a week or two ago.
Yeah.
So I know the book a bit better. I know it's Furukami, not Pharaoh Chemistry.
You bastard. You gaslit me into oblivion. You gaslit me so hard. I can't promise we're going to get all the names right because I still physically read this book.
I did audiobook it, though.
So you could correct me.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Okay,
or
we'll see.
I correct you to the wrong pronunciation again.
It's Ferukemi. That's how it's pronounced, right?
Don't separate the sounds. Ferukemi.
I was just trying to do it in my first grade level of reading.
That makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
We'll leave you at the grade you belong.
So keeping, we're just going to bring you back up to speed before going into book two, because hey, if you read book one, you're like, oh, should I read book two? I doubt there's some people like that, but just to get you back up to speed. Where we left off, Rich, you wanted me to take away with this?
Yes.
So end of book one with the Final Empire, Kelsier's dead. The Lord Ruler's taken down. Vin and Kelsier's whole plan all along was to make sure that they could take down the Lord Ruler, but at the same time making himself some type of god figure that would inspire the Ska to rise up and lead to a different, after the Lord Ruler goes away, have a society and a functional society. We leave right at the end where the Lord Ruler looks at Vin as Vin took away the bracelets that were on because he was a Ferukamist. He had Ferukami and Allomancy. And so that was his whole secret. And now we see him wither and die because he was storing up his age and with using both of the magic systems. As he's dying, says, you've doomed all of yourselves. Everybody is doomed now. I was protecting you all. Something of that sort. And leaves with that very ominous message for Vin and the team. That's where we left off going into book two.
Yep.
Do you think I missed anything? I think that's a big point of where
you
left off.
You basically got it. Yeah.
And then going into...
To be fair, you've read... Even though I reread book two, yeah. I haven't reread book one. So you have more
sure on that.
updated memory on it.
Do you have any comments on book two where, hey, do you remember on your first read before you went back into your second read, what you recalled of upon your reread, would you say you enjoyed it more, worse, the same, any difference from getting a fresh take?
I think I enjoyed it roughly about the same. There are a couple things that because I knew it was coming, it felt the clues felt a little heavy-handed in retrospect of like, oh, I should have seen that twist coming. I get it. I get it, Sanderson. So many clues. So many hints.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that affected my enjoyment at all, but we'll talk about that later when it comes to plot.
I was sleuthing online and I found a general agreement from the fans. So you guys out there, this is you saying this. I'm just taking this from Reddit. I'm taking this from Goodreads. On Goodreads, book two is the lowest score of the three. Mm-hmm. And on Reddit, every poll you'll see, it will typically say either The Final Empire book one or book three, Hero of Ages, are people's favorite. And book two is almost always on the bottom. There are those out there who did say that book two for them was their favorite, but they even acknowledge, like, the fan base generally says this is the least favorite. If you in the comments think it's the best, let us know, and let us know why as well. Because I think for me, I enjoyed book one. I really enjoyed book one. Really great book. This was still a good book, but I had more complaints. With my complaints being there, I'm still very excited to finish this series. So if I could sum up my thoughts is, book one was better, but book two keeps me in a state of, if I was to give a one-word review, I love the setup that this is going into book three. I didn't feel as paid off in this book, but I love where it's going, the direction. I'm there. Destination before journey. You know what Sanderson says. So what would you say? Would you agree that book one was better, or do you think this topped it?
Oh, yeah. No, to give the numbers of it, I give it a whole half point. A full quarter point.
Oh, quarter point.
A quarter point.
Okay.
Lower.
So your star rating for this is 4 out of 5?
I was right the first time. Yeah. I gave Original Mistborn a 4.25.
Yes.
I gave Well of Ascension a 3.75. So a whole half point lower.
And that is a Ramble rating, so it's official score.
That's the official Ramble rating score
right there.
Okay. As of today, it's the official score. Yes.
Can always change. I gave the first book a 4.25, really great book.
Same as me.
I gave The Well of Ascension a 3.5 out of 5 stars.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Good book.
Good book.
Good book.
But
good book.
Just good.
Good. It's a good book.
Good.
I'll leave it there. I have some complaints, but book good. 3.5 on our scale is good. Good.
Yeah.
Good. So we're somewhat there. Maybe you liked it a little bit more than me,
ever so slightly,
very slightly. But, okay,
yeah, no, I have my complaints as well.
Okay, I do want to say here as well. I had a chat with some of the patrons in our Patreon Discord. You can join us for some book clubs. We do them every month. Actually, recently when I've just been finishing books, I've just been hosting book clubs to chat, give thoughts for when the reviews mm-hmm. come. It's also helpful to get refreshed on stuff. Like, oh, okay, I didn't notice that. It's helpful. And of course, I talked to Levy. Levy's a very negative person on our Discord. He hates books. And so,
he does. He just is a real book hater. What brings him joy is hate. That's what flows through his veins.
You two get along.
Yeah.
So Levy and some others were bringing up some points of they were generally also saying this book was worse than book one, with the caveat that it still is not a bad book. But a lot of them were saying, and I do agree, it has that middle book syndrome.
It's setting up a lot and leaves a lot to be desired, or just, you know, most of the payoff's going to be in the next book.
Yep.
Versus the first book had it promised the death of the Lord Ruler. Well, kind of promised it, but the death of the Lord Ruler
a good
is
heist.
The big ending. And it feels like a good ending to the book. Where this one, it does feel like the middle point of a big arching story that we maybe not at the act two type deal. It feels like it's the beginning of act three. We leave off with, here's where the ending's supposed to be.
Yep.
And we don't get it. But hey, that's how it's straight. It's not a huge thing, but it's just something of, I like book one more.
Yeah. And with that being said, we'll be reviewing book three pretty soon after this. Like, it's not going to be a long wait. I'm very invested to go into book three. Sanderson never disappoints. I'm not disappointed by this book at all.
Yeah.
He will always give me something that's like, you know what? I spent my time wisely.
Sure.
He always clears that box for me. Because before we get into spoilers for this, mm-hmm. do you want to say what was your favorite, what was your best category that you think he did here and the worst for a rating?
Best for me is still the world, though I will say it is a little bit lower than book one. Everything else is fairly consistent. It would be world, and then I think characters are the best.
As the best, you said?
Best category.
Oh, okay. World's above that, though, you're saying.
World's above it, but then next one would be characters, and then everything else is basically the same.
Okay.
And the characters, it's a carryover. There's some ups, some downs.
I have a lot to say on that because Kelsier gone. I'm very curious what you think with him gone and that new character who I quite like, but we'll get there. Elland. Okay, so for me, I think best as well as world. Agree with you. Little step down for the prior one. World's the best. Worst, I would say pros.
Sure.
If I had to put a, it's not bad. Just if I had to put at least, like, well, if you're going into Mistborn, you've already read book one, you're not reading it for its pros. Where I think my maybe hot take is I think the step from Mistborn to Way of Kings and Stormlight, I think Stormlight pros, like, I really like Stormlight pros. Mistborn feels more a YA-ish where he's able to be a little bit more, not pontificate, he's able to be more kingly in Stormlight. I just like the lines there. It makes me feel like I have testosterone again, you know? It just makes me feel like something. All right, so do you want to go into spoilers?
I think it's spoiler time.
Spoiler time. Click off if you don't want spoilers for Well of Ascension Book 2. Also, affiliate link in the description if you want to get the book. It supports us, but hey, we're going to go.
While we're in the spoiler section, before people click off, if you want to support us by buying our merch, we got t-shirts, got hats, bookmarks are really cool. We paid artists. They did a good job. We made bookmarks. Buy that. So give us money.
We plug Patreon. Okay, we got that. We plug merch.
This is a Mistborn video. We have to plug affiliate everything. Link.
Let's see.
You understand that when it comes down to Dungeon Crawler Carl, if we miss a plug, it doesn't matter.
No
one cares but us. We like our Dungeon Crawler videos.
No one watches our crawler videos, but I will rewatch them.
We're doing
When we're grandparents, one day we look back like,
that's the one I'm going to rewatch. Yeah. But no, we forget sometimes, and I feel bad.
No,
that
I'm glad
things.
You did.
We plug it at the very end, and I'm like, that's not good.
What else do you expect from a podcast other than getting ad breaks and then us promoting stuff, giving a little bit of content, and then promoting more stuff?
Also, lots of buts and ums, awkward silences.
Yeah,
that's an important factor in a podcast. Yeah, I think we should have that pause there for all those people who are just putting the video in 2x speed.
Yep.
Make it harder for him.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on.
I got a little uncomfortable there. So it does suck. That's always a nervous tick of mine. Like if the guest is on or something, I'll be like, oh, I got to say something. Yeah. So being better in silence is good sometimes.
It's so much fun to be at a party and talking with someone and just letting the silence hang. It's like a game of chicken. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Have you ever like just sat in front of someone like in mid conversation and then you just let it die and you stare them in the eyes? Look at them as you let the silence hang.
Yeah,
and
but
wait until they say
anytime
something.
I've ever done that, it's unintentional. It's like I'm so awkward. What do I say? So yeah, it's happened unintentionally for sure.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm
the only one that likes to do it intentionally.
That's the longest spoiler warning you're ever going to get on this channel.
Yeah.
Spoilers coming. Mistborn, you ready for first category?
Yep.
Emotional impact, would you give it out of 5 stars?
I give it a 3.75.
So matches with your overall score.
Yep. Slightly lower than last book.
Mine matches well. I gave it a 3.5. Good. Good book. Same feeling. So why did you give it that? What do you think this was going for? Is it similar stuff as book one? Action mystery?
Yeah, basically. The mystery for me, again, being spoiled on it, doesn't have the same impact. There's a couple big arcs, like the arguably one of the bigger plot lines with Vin and stupid boy.
Zane.
Yeah. That didn't work for me. Emotionally speaking, not buying it. Very uninterested in that whole thing. So kind of took some of my enjoyment out of it, but positives, I really enjoyed moments of Sazed going to find am I saying it right, Tindwill?
I read as Tindwill. You Tindwill? Did the audiobook.
Okay.
So I read Tindwill on the page. That's just how my head
I
does
heard
it,
Tindwill okay. and read it. Got it. Tindwill. Him finding her body and just the way the scene played out, I thought was just so good. There's so many different books where it's, you know, it's a big emotional moment and you get to see the character sees the other's death. It was something a bit more tragic of dies off page and Sazed knows she's gone and is just sifting through the bodies and finds her. It just, there's no big last stand. we all know it's happened of like, there's no report back. Just, I don't know. It felt more tragic to me at that moment. And I got emotional during that scene. So that was the most emotional moment for me of the book. I really enjoyed it.
Would you say that any moment with, so not action scene, but that the mysteries get you very invested? So the whole, who's the Chandra? Who's killed in the crew? Did that mystery do it for you? Did the whole Well of Ascension mystery? Those. So I guess just to preface this, the plot line's going for, if we're saying, hey, what's it trying to make you feel? That mysterious aspect and the action. And so the action that you liked is when there was kind of inaction where it died off page was compelling because you saw the action happening, but then the tragedy of Tyndall dying off page was worse and more gut-wrenching. Yeah. But did the mystery aspect with finding out that it's Tensoon or Sir, if that's how you say it, were you wowed by that? Were you going like, holy crap, that was the mystery?
Well, I'm definitely the wrong person to ask on this.
Oh, yeah.
I knew all the twists coming.
Yeah.
And so I got to see it through hindsight of I picked up on every single clue that Sanderson is giving you. And to me, reading it, it felt so obvious of, man, why didn't I pick this up when I first read the book?
Yeah.
But the better question is to ask you the same thing. Did the mysteries get you? Were you intrigued by the Tensoon, and Orsor plot line? Yeah. Did you like that whole traitor aspect? Did you like the whole Zane mystery of like what's going on with him? The nature of everything to do with Sazed and the metal engraving? How'd the mystery aspect go for you?
For me, so we'll get the Zane in that in characters. I'm kind of with you on that. So okay. All that, the Zane, I have stuff to say. But for the mysteries alone of how I was being emotionally pulled, I didn't see it coming. I didn't see it coming because I don't know how Sanderson does this every single time in his books. I won't spoil other books, but it's just kind of right there in front of you. Like you said, you should know it. Like, oh, of course. That's when I read this a second time, I'm sure I won't read it a second time for, I don't love rereading, while. But yeah. A while if I ever did. It's probably right there, like you said, just right in front of your face. And I was fully believing because it's kind of a very B plot story, maybe even C, D plot, because there's four different plots going on here.
It does, doesn't it feel
super
like
in the background.
Traitor amongst your best friends.
Yeah.
It felt very much not just like a B plot line, but like a
I would be
like,
figuring out that shit immediately.
That's first priority. Yeah. Wait, are you? The fact that it was handled that way was weird.
Yes,
character wise, that should be priority number one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I have a plot complaint about that. Yes, I agree with the way it was handled.
That when Vin had some free time, I might as well investigate. Like, what do you mean?
Say what? Say Zed. That's exactly how it kind of went. Yeah.
Yeah. So a little weird.
Yeah, I guess as well the one thing I was complaining about in my head was, oh, why don't you just test the allomancy on them like immediately? And then realizing, okay, it could be one of her friends that isn't an allomancer, so you kind of have to investigate and ask them questions to see if the conversation she had with them to see, okay, is this the person? She also doesn't want to blatantly say it because then it kind of gets the ruse out. Whereas if she went and said like she was looking for the Draenor, like interrogating them like that, the Chandra would then know. But what? Anyways, we'll talk more plot. For mystery itself, for the mystery, yeah, I didn't realize it would be. And also the Well of Ascension mystery at the end. I think mystery aspect, I knew the deepness and mist were connected in that way. That seemed rather obvious at the beginning. But the fact that the well was calling and was releasing something bad, I picked up on it at some point in the third act, like before the reveal happened, but not until toward the end of the book.
Okay.
For me, I'm not sure for other people if they were reading it and then caught something at a certain time, but yeah, no, the mysteries did surprise me, and overall action was decent as well. So overall good feelings for the book. I guess a lot of my emotion, my pull toward this could be more explored and as we get deeper into the other stuff. But if you have anything else for like something that bothered you a lot, did something bug you that kept it from going higher, or is it good overall and not too many complaints?
It's good overall. There's a mixed bag. For specifically the idea of the Well of Ascension being a trap.
Yeah.
Like chapter one for me, especially this being a reread, of course.
Reread, yeah.
All of the, not prelude, what do they call them?
Epigraphs.
The epigraphs.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Reading those, it was like, yeah, I should have picked this up real early that the Well of Ascension was like that whole thing is bad of like it's a trick. The fact that he basically says right in the beginning of, yeah, we can't let the hero reach the Well of Ascension. I was like, oh, why? And just all that stuff kind of added on to it that, oh, it's a trick. Mm. There's something wrong here. And so all of those, along with Sazed's journey with Marsh, which I'll lay this here, but I thought it was good. I only picked it up on it on my reread. Do you remember when Marsh and Sazed went to the beginning, that whole Inquisitor hideout?
Yes.
And Marsh is going down there and he says, like, hey, you don't want to go into this room that I'm going to. Stay here. And Sazed finds the metal placard that he's starting to read. Marsh immediately comes back and says, like, we have to go now. We're going now. It's like, is there danger?
Right.
No. But we're going now. We have to immediately get back. It's like, I kind of want to read this thing here. And it's like, nope, we're going now. It's like, well, I'll take a rubbing of it first. And then just let me take a quick rubbing. You know, pencil and paper rubbing. And Marsh's like, okay, we'll wait for that.
Yeah.
Now on the reread, caught immediately of, oh.
Pencil, paper,
not Marsh metal. Was not willing to let him read the metal. But it was perfectly fine with letting him take the reading of it. So that was a cool plot point to pick up on.
That's cool.
Early on, Marsh was, you know, I caught that early on in the beginning.
Nice.
Anyway, it's a nice little plot point I caught early on that I liked.
Sanderson plans this stuff out. I think his reveals and the reason I'm compelled to read on as well has everything to do with the setup this book does. The things that I didn't realize were that point with Marsh that's paying off at the end of book two here. I imagine in book three, a lot of what's being set up in this book is just going to be as you look back and like, oh my God, it's setting up for this and this and this. So do you want to go on to thought-provokingness, overall themes, messages? Would you give that out of 5 stars?
Same thing, a 3.75.
I give it 3.5. Good overall. So
good overall.
What did you like about what themes stuck out to you? Because I think I know.
There's two.
Can we talk about the first one?
We can talk about the first one. Why don't you give it to me? Tell the people. Tell the people what the biggest theme. This is the theme that Brandon Sanderson agrees with. This is what he's trying to promote in his books. The message that here at Tudor Ramble, we have even a t-shirt on.
So he supports teetering your totter is what Sanderson appreciates. That, you know, he basically says democracy is cringe in this book.
Yes, he does.
It's the message of the book.
The message of the book is democracy is cringe.
I'm surprised it's not 5-star for you. I don't know why it isn't. It's the entire message.
It is the entire thing. Democracy is hella cringe.
Clearly through Elend and his arc and learning through Tyndwill and how to be a good king and him being so honest. He's so honest to a fault. Literally to a fault. He will give up his leadership and authority because it's for the people.
The people. The people know what the people deserve a say in what happens to them. They will make the right decision. The people should definitely make the decision. And then Ellen learns the lesson of, no, the people make bad decisions. And he should just take the reins of power and make the correct decisions. Because democracy is cringe.
So you floored. That message was incredible.
That message floored me. It's the best. It's great. I loved it.
You just wish Sanderson like quoted you is the only problem.
Yeah, that's why I'm not giving it the full thing. It's not totally 5 stars because he totally ripped me off.
Yep.
You know, not
totally understand.
Well, he ripped Aristotle off, but that's fine. I ripped Aristotle off. It's all good.
So what other? I mean, that message. Do you want to explore that more? Or I think the point of that whole arc is Ellen learning to become a better king and dealing between honesty, duty, and actually what is not just right for your own moral code, but right for something beyond yourself.
Well, he's learning the lesson of with authority comes responsibility and a burden, of which the problem with his democratic system was that the people who had authority ultimately didn't have the responsibility for it. That they were willing to sell out the people because ultimately they weren't going to suffer from it.
Yeah.
There's an inherent tie of they didn't feel tied to the people. They didn't feel tied to the city. They didn't have an ownership of it. So they were willing to sell out their role, their city, and their people for a role, money, whatever it is. Versus Elend, it's his people, his city. And he has not just a responsibility and ownership. It elevates to a responsibility that the others didn't. And so, ultimately, he had the best intentions for the people versus the merchants and the other nobles and all them. So
it's kind of like he was giving authority to the wrong people. Authority should be in the right hands of the right people. What's your democracy is cringe is, hey, if he is the most, if he is the most apt and perfect person for the role, he has the best intentions, you should be the one to step up. It's kind of, if you ever heard this, if you're in a room at a conference and there's a dozen of you at the table and there's one really disagreeable person there, contrarian to everything, to the biggest, tiniest minutia thing. And if the whole team, 11 people, are constantly compromising down to that one person and compromising, okay, we want the budget to be $1,000. They're going, no, $10, let's be super frugal and do this. So we meet in the middle at 500, whatever the whole discussion is. A lot of times you give authority to the wrong person in the room. So if there's 11 people and the 12th is being super disagreeable, sometimes just an opinion. So sometimes in this case with Elend and looking at these people who just want the city to be taken over and give away to Straff, a horrible person, don't even have the right goalposts in mind. So that their opinion shouldn't be taken seriously if they have malintent.
Yeah. So he assumes good intentions from everyone. Mm-hmm. And not even just that. It's even if it's a straight up vote, he realized that the people are afraid.
Yeah.
And that fear can be used against them in the way that would take advantage of them, and ultimately they would vote against their own self-interest. He knows Straff would enslave them and kill so many people, and that Straff is a liar, and that ultimately the fear-mongering tactics is just going to hurt everyone in the long run. And he sees that, and yet he allows people to go through with it because they've been tricked and hoodwinked. He learns that, no, sometimes people don't know what they want. They don't know actually how to best to rule their own lives. He does. And part of it is standing up for what you think is right. Don't let everyone else influence you. Pick the right people to let influence you.
Yeah.
It's fine to have advisors, but at the end of the day, you make the decision. That was the big thing with Elend learning of great to have people to talk to and listen to, but he's the king. He makes a decision, and ultimately, he's also most responsible. Anyway.
What was the second message you got from it?
Oh, I mean, definitely it's about Vin, and we kind of get a retread of the first book of how to trust, and it's more so, rather than how to trust, it's more how to love. And Vin learns the nature of love and that love is about respect and trust, not just attraction and...
I have the quote here. Quote is Vin's internal monologue says, "You must love him," referring to Elend, "enough to trust his wishes. It isn't love unless you learn to respect him. Not what you assume is best, but what he actually wants."
Yep. That's the message. Mm. That's basically it. And so I liked it. It's well done. What are your thoughts?
I had that down too, but that wasn't the second most prominent I found. My thoughts on that are, that message is there. Wasn't anything revolutionary. Message got it.
Sure. Okay.
But then the message that I guess connected more was something, an interesting tidbit was with Sazed, and his struggle with belief, and him and I think it was Hammond that had the conversation about he has so many of these religions in his background, believes in so many things. Does he really believe in nothing? Like, which one will he actually believe?
This gets into that's for a different channel, but I'll keep that. We'll talk after.
Okay, we'll talk after.
It confirms my own beliefs and other things, but it's fine. But no, he believes in everything, and therefore he believes in nothing. And because Sazed believes in all these different religions, he doesn't have to stand by anything. He has a different belief for any different scenario.
It's why we support the Ramble rating system. Don't just give, you know what? It's like, it could be a 5, could be a 1, could be... I don't rate things. No!
Stand by your word.
It is a 3.5, and the fact that you gave it a 3.75, you're wrong.
Yeah, no, exactly. You are just a Brandon Sanderson hater for giving it 0.25 lower than me. I'm the real Sanderson fan.
Some would say...
You're the hater.
Some would say a simp.
Yeah.
Mm. We actually had... I think we've had several videos now where we called ourselves Brandon Sanderson simps, why Brandon Sanderson's the GOAT, etc. Yeah. Etc.
This makes us more honest.
Yes.
Makes you more honest because you are lowballing again.
I am also... This is probably the lowest Sanderson book I've ever rated on the channel. I've rated it. Yeah, this is a big deal for me. I don't know. I feel uncomfortable. So, yes, with Sazed, I think we're saying it right. Sazed.
If the internet's of any consequence, which they aren't.
Yeah.
They aren't. But if they are,
mm-hmm.
you're in for a time with Era 2. Apparently, a lot of people don't like Era 2.
Oh.
A lot.
Is this true?
That is the current internet consensus, that Era 2 okay. is not as good as Era 1.
Okay. I know our friend Justin thinks the same as well.
He is in agreement with most people. Okay. I haven't read it, so I have no idea.
Huh.
Okay. I'm perfectly willing to believe that the entirety of the internet is wrong, and I am right, and that the books are amazing. I'll get there when I get there.
Good. Good.
Yeah.
Do you want to go on to characters?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do characters. What did you give that out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 4. I thought it was great
characters.
In the sense of there's some ups, downs, but it's a carryover from Ooh. Book 1.
Okay.
But it's peaks and valleys. You yes. know what I mean?
Oh, I agree. And I think we agree. Our rating just shows different. I give it 3.5 as well. This is one of those books where I've had a consistent 3.5 for a lot of it because I think it just does everything good.
Mm-hmm.
But does it? Yeah. I want to hear why. So your 4-star, you thought it was great. What? Can I just toss two characters? I'll toss one character out at you where I very much agree with you on your high rating. Elland.
Yeah. He is the reason. If without him, this would be a 3.5 or a 3.75
something
along
like
with
that.
Everything else.
Yep.
He himself pushes it over the edge of why I say it's ultimately great. Other characters have mostly either stayed the same, a little bit dipped. Some new characters introduced were really didn't like.
Yep.
Elland was such a standout in this book.
He had from book one, he had so much to grow because book one was very surface level, superficial, didn't get him.
Mm-hmm.
This book we see has clear flaws.
Clear flaws, but definitely positive attributes. You get to see how much he can change, mm-hmm. how to build a king, how to build a man. It's great.
Maybe this is where, I know Sanderson's already been writing this, but Sanderson loves to have his toying with kings, the way of kings. What makes a man? Mm-hmm. What makes a king? So and this exploration of Elland, something I appreciated about him was he was in book one, being so surface level, kind of just that guy, didn't get a lot of his point of view. The fact that we had Kelsier was that person that took a lot of the presence, and Elland was his background. Like, who are you, schmuck?
Mm-hmm.
Book two, Kelsier's gone. Elland could step up, be a way bigger character. The fact that he's king as well helps do that. But for him, what was it about his arc? Him as a person, what came off the page for you? Is it something, was there a moment for you, or just the overall theme of him and Tyndall and seeing those constant interactions?
I mean, it's the growing over time. It's an accelerated arc that Randall Thor goes through.
Ah.
I think Randall Thor hits it better because it's stretched out longer. Like, I feel it more authentically. I'm more attached to that character and
okay.
that specific journey.
Hmm.
But in terms of arcs, Ellen goes through the exact same thing in a much quicker time.
Right.
So I enjoy that aspect. Everything with Tin Will, perfection. Love it. I like how he started of... He's accepted by the crew, but he's definitely not the king to them. He can't replace Kelsier. It's by the very end that you can see potential of like, okay, yeah, he will be a greater leader than Kelsier. That he can do things that Kelsier can't, and he can actually take control and will be a king.
He's a
rather than just
now.
A yeah, yeah, but he won't just be a revolutionary. He will be a king.
I even appreciated the crew themselves. Someone like Breeze.
Mm-hmm.
Was actually soothing or riling him up when Ellen was talking to the crew to give him more confidence. We saw Breeze was doing that. And, oh, okay, they're accepting him, and that was really neat to see.
Added to the rest of the characters, I think basically all the other crew members, we got a little bit more of them, all of them very enjoyable. I don't think we saw any kind of dip in any of their characters. I thought they were really enjoyable. A couple of standouts like Breeze. I loved all the stuff we got with Breeze specifically. In addition, I liked him and who's the... The girl of Set.
Alrain, I believe. Alrain or Amaranta? Oh, no, Alrain.
I don't think that was not in Seth's daughter,
Alrin. That Am I saying it completely wrong?
I think you're saying it completely wrong.
It's A-L-L-R-I-A-N-N-E. Alrin?
Alrin.
Okay, is that it?
That's it.
Did I really say Alrin. That? I said that Alrin when I was reading the damn book. I got problems.
It's Alrin.
Alrin, got it. But yes,
I loved Seth's her addition with Breeze, especially the little mini twist of actually she's been kind of riling up
Breeze. Yeah,
that's pretty good. I loved I loved how that played off each other.
I like too because having the older guy, younger girl, like it, very creepy if Breeze is just being a predator, and like it definitely
improves the situation of
she's using magic.
She's using magic and to manipulate him. Yes. It's stated clear.
Yeah.
She is the one. She's doing it. Yep. She's pursuing. Not
and
him.
Breeze is still resisting the best he can.
He's doing his best.
Which is, you got to respect. He's like, so it was interesting to see. Yeah. It made put Breeze in a light where you're not like, oh, Breeze is a bad person. Well, you see.
It's a magical way of say of like not victim blaming, like going like.
No.
It's very much of like, oh no, she was like, because in any real circumstance, they kind of like large age gap. And you go like, oh no, she was actually manipulating him and he's a lot older. It's like going, really? Doubt. All right. This case, no. Magic.
She had a wand in her hand.
She had the magic. She said, Alakazam. Alakazam, you now like me more now.
Yeah, so that was like cute little twist there at the end of like, oh, okay. Because we get the perspective as we're reading this, like we get this Seth's daughter comes back and we look at Breeze and Vin looks at Breeze and they're all going, oh wow, Breeze, why would you do that? And thinking poorly of Breeze. And then we find out later.
How much
so the way it was
Breeze deliberately hurts his own character. One, it improves his role as a soother.
Yeah.
He's underestimated. That's the kind of key to being a soother or a rioter is you need to be flying under the radar and people to not think much of you. That way you're able to actually be more effective. Mm. And so that's what Breeze does. Makes perfect sense. Love his addition to the character. The same thing with Seth's daughter and how much she does it. The exact same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I got to mention Sazed as well. Sazed and his character, the theme we talked about with him as well. I just thought him and Tyndall had good dynamic.
All the things I was spoiling in the first book.
Thanks.
I think we're done with the spoilers. I don't think I've done anything further.
Well, you've read the book recently, so I would be stunned.
No. I mean, in the first video, I don't think I spoiled anything past. Book three? I don't think I have.
Okay. I'm. It's you in forgot. One. It's in one ear, out the other.
It doesn't matter.
I don't even want to talk about it.
It's good.
So we're good. But I agree with you. The crew improved. I think because Kelsier was gone, Kelsier is probably my favorite character in book one. Him and Sazed. Sazed's still a great character here, and Ellen takes the role. I would say Ellen and Sazed were my favorites. Would you say Ellen and just the crew in general improved? Is that why you have the high rating?
Yeah, but I would also say feeling of hate. I had great hatred for Straff Venture. I loved to hate him. Every time he was on screen, on page, I hated him so much. I wanted him to die. And when he did die, it was very enjoyable. I don't know about you. When you really hate your villain, that's a good thing.
I think he was a bad guy. I'm going to say it here.
He's a real bad guy.
Hot take. Not a good dude.
He was a pretty pure evil character, and I enjoyed hating him.
That's fair. I think my complaints come in isn't necessarily with he was an evil character. I would say I kind of lump in Seth, Straff, and Zane as the villains here, the antagonists of the story. Looking at book one with the Lord Ruler was just this force to be reckoned with, didn't know how you would beat the Lord Ruler. I guess my issue with the antagonists here, they were never threatening in and of themselves. Straff never came across as threatening. He came across as evil. Seth, evil. Zane was the most technically threatening because he was a Mistborn and Alomancer. When he was gone, I had no doubt that Vin was just going to wreck everybody. So there wasn't a force that Vin had to struggle against. Biestreff had his way of just being demented.
Yeah, it was all internal struggle for her of realizing, hey, one of my friends could be a traitor, or really one of my friends is dead. Then her struggling with her love and trust of Ellen, and now Zane, this you know, the, hey, he looks like the guy I'm in love with, but also he's a Mistborn and has that little dark edge to him. And then, yeah.
Yeah, that whole, let's talk about Zane as a character.
Let's talk about, I didn't like him. I didn't like him as a character. Not that, oh, I don't like the bad guy. It's more, I don't like how that character was represented. I didn't believe that the character was real. Really didn't like Zane.
Why did that come across that way to you?
Here's a part of the thing. I was wondering if he was set up at all in book one, because the whole thing of his whole motivation saying, like, oh, Vin is supposed to be the one to save me. I didn't buy that motivation at all. Mm. Did not like it. All of his interactions with Vin were just kind of mostly confusing and weird and felt so tied to the plot and not really like his own character, which I think Sanderson normally does a great job at that. But it felt like all of Zane's actions was just to drive a plot and him not actually being his own person.
I have that exact thing in my notes. I totally agree. Where his, as far as not saying this word super in a derogatory way, but the word useless, like as a useless character, meaning mm-hmm. you kind of serve one purpose. And there's exceptions to this. I get that. But where his role there is for Vin's arc.
Yeah.
He's there for Vin's arc and doesn't seem as if he stands on his own, essentially.
It feels like he's kind of waiting around just for the plot to be, and his motivation is just so heavily tied to what does the plot need to happen next. And it just never feels like he's on his own.
The coolest part about him was when God spoke to him as he died and said, hey, I'm actually real. You're not crazy. That was cool.
That's a cool line.
That was cool.
It was the best moment that Zane had was his death.
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
But Zane himself, I had the same issues where I guess it was between Zane and Vin where I had the issue, because my biggest complaint about the book is Vin's character arc and as a character, and she's the main protagonist, so I just couldn't see myself. I loved Ellen, loved Zed, the crew got better, but Vin, especially her struggle with Zane and Zane coming to her essentially saying, hey, they're using us as knives. They're using us and you need to rebel, come trust me. I never bought Vin was going to go with Zane. I also never bought the idea that Vin at the end, where there was a bit of this bit of temptation, you know, Lord of the Rings aspect, will you put on the ring? There was a bit of this at the end where Vin was being talked about from Sazed and others, oh, will she go to the well and take the power for herself? So there was a bit of that plot at the end with, oh, will Vin do it? And to me, I'm going, no, not for a second am I doubting that Vin is going to make the right choice, which, hey, is freeing the what we find out is this thing, this ethereal thing, whatever it is that escapes at the end, is tricked into doing that. But not for a second did I doubt her true intentions and motivations that she's a good person.
I'll actually double down to in a complete agreement with you.
Yeah.
You're making so many good points when you agree with me.
Something's going wrong right now. The Matrix is out of whack. Yeah.
But I think a key to this is her invasion of Set's mansion. That's supposed to be her dark moment where you go, oh, maybe she will be tempted. Maybe she will take the power. Maybe she will go with Zane. That whole scene was a half measure. Yeah, she killed a bunch of nameless, faceless people. But when it came down to Set, she spared him and his son. Which to me kind of just went, yeah, no, she is like, she didn't go far enough for me to really believe that she may in the future take the wrong path.
Take the power, do whatever, go with Zane. Yeah.
I think if we went all in of, because ultimately, it also wasn't a big mistake. Like, Set got it, like, the whole thing that, yeah, she was wrong because now Set is leaving, and so now we don't have Set's army to defend against. To me, I don't think that's as much of a loss. I think he probably just would have left anyway, would have figured a way out. So, but her killing Set could have been a really huge negative, like, for everyone else. It would have been a real loss, a real wrong decision for her character to make. Also would have given her more enemies with Set's daughter Sam herself. We would get more of, oh, she actually went all the way with Zane. Like, will she take the power for herself?
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have made her character arc more believable.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Because what would you say her arc was in this book? Because I think you mentioned this, I felt the same, that it was a bit of a rehash of book one.
Yeah,
there were similar themes there.
She learned how to trust in book one, mm-hmm. and in this one, she learned to trust who she loves.
Yeah.
and the nature of love and all that thing. So
yeah,
it's
yeah.
similar. It's along the same path. Would she take the power for herself? It's like, no.
No.
She's never shown that through book one or two that she had any kind of desire for power or selfish nature. Mm-mm. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah, my biggest disappointment was Vin and the villains in general with Zane. Streff, I agree with you. He's definitely a hateable character.
I liked it when he died.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable.
I think the big thing missing for my emotional pull, too, going back to that, is the threat of the Lord Ruler was, boom, how are you going to beat the Lord Ruler and do this heist? This is, okay, we'll talk in plot, but this is still a good threat, and I like some of the aspects that happened. But I was very much more into the Well of Ascension theme of, okay, what's the doom of the world? So the B-plot stuff, which we'll get into, was more, okay, I think they're going to solve this without an issue. Okay, last thing, I kind of want to throw this at you, too. I forgot to talk in Ellen's character, let's end on a better note, maybe.
Sure.
Where this is what Tyndall said to Ellen, which is part of that theme we were talking about, but I think puts it in a more succinct way, where Tyndall says this: humility is fine when considering your responsibility and duty, but when it comes time to make a decision, you must not question yourself.
I loved all of Tyndall's lines. Tyndall was also a fantastic character. Great addition. You immediately fell in love with her as soon as she was introduced. She just had charisma on page, and she didn't have that much page time, really. So also bought her her relationship with Sazed, and was equally tragic when she died. So
nice.
Again, Sanderson is always really good at getting you to quickly care about characters. I think he's one of the best at doing that. Like, all it takes is a chapter, and you're like, oh, I really like this character.
Now, since Democracy is cringe,
true.
I gave the 3.5, you gave the 4. We're not meeting in the middle at 3.75.
No, it's 4.
We're staying. Okay, it's 3.5. Agreed.
Again, you're wrong. You're allowed to be wrong.
It's objectively 3.5.
The objective answer is 4, but okay. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh, 4 with a Zane in there? Okay, that's interesting. All right.
I'm just saying, Ellen and Ten will carry hard.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. We agree on everything. It's to what degree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would still say they're all... he does enough that it's great.
Fair enough. Now, do you want to go on to plot?
Well, let's give it.
Okay, plot, would you give that out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 3.75. What did you give?
A lot of 3.75s for you.
Yep.
I gave it 3.5. A lot of
3.5s. You just thought this was... good.
Yeah.
Good book.
Yeah. After this is my last 3.5, I promise.
Okay.
But I think a lot of these are just good. Good, yeah. Doing solid stuff. For the plot, do you mind if I... So I got the 4 different plots that are going on in this book.
Give it to us.
Correct me if I'm wrong, if I missed one here. So these are the 4 to give everybody a refresher. What did the book promise us? What are the archetypes that are going on here? The first one is the Watcher / Zane's plot line with him and Vin and will she, won't she? Second is the Why Done It Condra mystery. The third is the Luthadel and the 3 surrounding armies, so the defend the city. And the fourth and last one is the Sazed and the Well of Ascension storyline. And with Marsh, you got all those characters going on. Obviously, you have your mini characters with Breeze having his thing, but that's all happening in Luthadel. So the 4 main ones are the Zane stuff, the Why Done It Condra, Luthadel, protect the city, and the Well of Ascension.
Okay.
I believe those are over 4, so we can kind of tackle the plot and what you thought about those 4, and want to just tackle one at a time.
Sure.
With first thing being the Watcher Zane plot line. We touched on this.
We already talked about it, but plot specific?
The plot line. What do you think plot-wise for what this did for the book? Yeah.
I didn't buy it, and then the bigger problem for me is it felt like it just kind of happened every once in a while. Mm-hmm. There was no timeline of events. It felt like Zane was just waiting around until next plot point was coming to be, and ultimately never bought the plot that it was actually going to happen. It ties into... Yeah, I just think Zane's plan is bad overall. What are your thoughts?
Bad plan, yeah. And on top of that, I think what you're going to... There's a bit of the pacing with Zane being extended there and just... I guess part of it popping up as this B plot in the larger scheme of the story was the least interesting of the 4 to me. And a part of that is because Vin's character is not going to be convinced and compelled by this. Part of that, I think, is Zane himself. What would make him more interesting if he's going to be her biggest opponent this book when she beat the Lord Ruler? apart from the get-go, I'm going, another Allomancer. She beat the Lord Ruler. She's a better Allomancer. I didn't even see him as that much of a threat, even when he was doing cool things.
Also, the only... like, yeah, there was all those moments of he has more control than yep. me. But then the big reason, the big threat is he has
ATM.
ATM, yep. I don't. And fair enough, that
yep.
settles the odds, but...
Yes, something with Zane there and his plan. I guess we talked. I don't want to rehash what we just said, so I'm trying to say something new, but I have nothing new to say from what we say in characters. Because
tying into it, there's parts of his plan that, one, I don't buy Vin being so convinced. Vin is so protective of Ellen and her friends and everything. Mm. Her to entertain Zane at all.
Yeah.
Is kind of a stretch. Like, just from the beginning of why wouldn't she just go out and kill him and do everything she can, but she spars with him, trains with him, and humors the idea.
Her reasoning was she needed, like, Kelsier was the person before she was able to train more.
Weak sauce.
I'm agreeing. I'm just saying the reasons given were.
Yeah, but no, he's the Mistborn of Strath. And she toys with especially Vin's character of going like, no, take charge. Her saying, I would rather just go out and slaughter Straff's army now than wait for Ellen to, like, I want to take power for Ellen.
Mm.
But she's willing to play around with Zane.
Also, it's like one of those love stories that goes on of, hey, who are they going to choose? Where she really has no reason not to love Ellen. She'll, in her inner monologue, in Vin's inner monologue, she convinces herself, she's distracting him, not good enough. He wants to be honest. I can't bring that to him. So in her, she's putting herself down, which is totally relatable. Totally
not putting
get that.
Zane up. Right. It's more it's of cheating. I'll go with exactly. Zane because I don't deserve Ellen.
Yep. Yep.
Which is not a good reason. Like, it's just never a compelling reason.
In any romance there, it's going, okay, what's the reason to be with the person, not to not be with somebody else? Because we do know from the outside perspective, looking at Vin, Ellen, they have no issues really. They're going to solve this.
It could have been him and I can imagine a better plot line where tie a lot deeper into Zane's manipulation and actually manipulating Vin and sound like, hey, look, Straff controls me. Straff has me under his thumb. I want to break free of him, but I need help.
Yeah.
I can't. He has X under me, or he's holding my mother hostage. I have to fight for him, but I don't want to. He's an evil man. I'm with you. Help me. Help me get out from under his thumb. And then maybe try and charm her a bit more of them, having more moments together of like, oh, no, Zane's actually pretty nice. Like, that could have been a lot more compelling of why she wouldn't just outright kill him.
Does Zane remind you of some incel that says like two lines to a woman and goes, oh, she loves me?
I've given her all the things. I've said I've loved her. Why doesn't she say she loves me back?
Come on, bro, ma'am. Very much felt like that.
I opened the door for you. Why won't you love me?
And being the most fair steel manning it, he is saying he thinks he's crazy. He has this God voice in his head, so he's not going to come across that way. But just for a compelling plot line, never made sense why Vin would leave for him.
Yeah.
Do you want to go second plot line here?
Worst ones out of the four.
Yes. The second one here, the why done it Condra mystery.
Sure.
Touched on that a bit.
We did touch on it. Surprising. It wasn't surprising for me because, of course, it's a reread.
Yeah.
It did surprise me on the first time. But for this one specifically, what felt odd as a plot, it felt like it was not a focus. This seems like it should have been a bigger deal than the book made it out to be. It felt like when Vin just had some spare time, she was going to investigate the traitor, where that should be priority number one. Investigate every close individual. More planning with Ellen of going like, hey, look, we need to come up with a plan for even in our council. Like, hey, look, I can confirm Breeze and Ham that they're not traitors because once she figured out the whole testing out with Allomancy, good, they're on the list. But all of our other best friends could be a traitor.
Totally agree.
Something, but it felt like it was an ignored issue until it wasn't.
Yeah, I think a part of the reason you enjoyed the characters more of this book is the type of plot Sanderson wrote here, with having her able to investigate one character at a time allowed us to have moment with Dachshund, moment with Breeze, moment with Hammond, moment with Renau or Danau, I don't know all the crew names to heart, but having a moment with each of them and seeing how they've changed after Kelsier's death and getting those one-on-ones was a way that Sanderson could explore that.
Mm-hmm.
But the stakes of having someone is infiltrated you, one of your closest friends is dead. That's a big news. That's a lot. So
will say this. I think to give Sanderson credit.
To Steelman it.
A big threat of, hey, one of our best friends, part of our inner council, could be a traitor, could be a Condra. The real threat behind that is they're close to the king and can kill them. That's a possibility with a regular traitor. A Condra specifically, they know, can't actually kill Elend. Can't actually do it themselves. Can't harm. So can't directly kill, can't put poison in the food, can't do any of that. The best they can do is open the doors to Elend's room or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So maybe take away some of that direct threat of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with your point that it seemed like it should have been more pressing. At the same time, there were reasons given. There were reasons that showed, okay,
it's the biggest threat would be information.
Yes. Biggest threat's information. Also, how can she solve this immediately? Because I was thinking in my head, why don't you just go do the Allomancy thing, see who's off the list? There's non-Allomancers. How do you ever find out who they are? She still questions who they are even after having conversations. So even when she thinks it's one of them, she thought it was Dachshund at one point, thought it was Renau. How do you find out in actuality? Because the Condras are that perfect. So a part of the reason why you can't just solve it right away is the Condras are masters. You cannot. It's so hard to figure out. So I get that it's difficult to do.
Now, she did find an answer, though. But not even at the end, but when she found out, oh, you can influence Condras with Deryllium and Allomancy. It's at that point when she found out, oh, you can actually do that.
Yep.
She should have gotten every single person that she hasn't, like, that's not an Allomancer that she hasn't confirmed, and just Deryllium and pushed him and see which one reacted the same way.
That would have been a great way for Vin's character to make her look like she could turn at the end, too. If she goes to her friends, no. Fuck this, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Stakes there.
Influences all the friends, but then, you know, one reacts more than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, you'd have Tensoon or, you know, what is Tensoon?
Or Sor.
Or Sor.
Turned into actually Tensoon. But
he would maybe be off.
Which worked again. I now know what that is.
Yeah, now you get it.
We can see it. I know what it is now.
Years. Yes. Years of the waking. You were always like, it's a little weird. Like, give us your thoughts. Like, you saw the thing years ago of like, it's weird. It's a dog that, you know, turns inside out into a skeleton dog. That's a little strange.
I never questioned it.
Not once?
Not once. I looked at the thing. I just thought it was cute. Little old Tensoon. Oh, look at you eating bodies. Oh. That we call him Red, right? Red's his name.
You called him Red.
Yeah, I call him Red.
Yeah.
So I now know who Red is. Red is Tensoon. That's awesome.
There you go.
Fantastic. So that plot line. So we're already talking with the Zane plot line, that plot line. I will agree the progress and figuring out was the worst part of the why done it. I did love the answer to it. The answer being Tensoon was, oh, I didn't see that coming.
And it makes sense.
So it made me look in retrospect of a plot I wasn't enjoying as much because of that progress, because of, can you solve this a different way, whatever it might have been. The ending was satisfying.
Yeah, so, I agree with you as well.
Yes. Now, the third plot line we could look into, the Luthadel, the city itself.
Oh, I do want to add one last thing to it.
Throw it in.
I completely forgot.
Yep.
It made it more impactful with how Vin was treating Osor.
Yeah.
Of how she was trying to connect with him more, and that being the ultimate reason why Osor helped her at the very end and kind of betrayed his contract.
Oh, yeah, definitely did. Very in subtext.
Yes. Betrayed the contract, but maybe, did. But that was ultimately very fulfilling of why that was important, not just for her as a character and for Tensoon's character, but overall.
we read the same book. Had the same opinion so far. We will divulge at some point. Maybe Mistborn's where we agree. Sanderson's where we usually agree, I think.
I guess so, yeah. We both love it.
So with Luthadel, and am I saying this correct, right?
Luthadel.
With Luthadel, from the start of that, so what we're promised is we initially get the one army with Streff out there. Then quickly, I think end of part one, this happens, Breeze comes in, BC brought a second army set. I thought that was a cool intro with...
Great intro, makes perfect sense.
Yes. Vin's coming in, uses the Duralim, shoots him out of there. I'm going, oh, that's cinematic. That's cinema, bro. And then we see the two armies out there. Makes sense. We're in a standoff. Okay, cool. Kallus army comes toward the end. That's another plot point. But the two armies being there, and Vin, Ellen, all the crew being on the inside.
Kolas.
Thank you. Okay.
There you go.
And so all of our team being in Luthadel, what did you think about the progress from that, the plot points that happened?
Definitely one of the more enjoyable parts. Again, this is where we get the whole idea that democracy is cringe with Ellen dealing with the two armies and trying to navigate, be a good king, navigate around the council, all the espionage set just coming down. And it's like, hey, vote for me to be king. If this whole democracy thing, why not? If you don't, I'm going to invade and kill you all.
That was a unique angle. I did not see that coming.
Definitely showed the... downside of Ellen's whole system. Set was like, well, what? Okay, you have this whole vote thing for your king to give voice to the people. What if I just bought those votes? How about that? What if I just bribe everyone? That work? Oh, that's completely allowed? This seems like a great system. Imagine if we ever lived in a system where, you know, our leaders could be bought.
Right.
Bought and paid for by nefarious individuals.
Imagine there's a system where you could just give someone money and then force them to read a book and a vote every month on a book club.
Terrible. It almost be like it would be better if there were checks and balances of secret behind the scenes where ultimately the vote doesn't matter.
They think they have
power.
But in reality,
that's the most important part. The people need to believe that they have a say.
The facade of free will.
Exactly.
We're all here. We all think, oh, I did this because I wanted to. Or did you just do that because everything in your life led you to that moment to do and make that decision?
See, now
are we beings or
that,
are we not?
See, that's the real thing is democracy is the psyop that keeps you in tyranny.
Oh, that's a new quote on the shirts. The t-shirts just get way more and more dark and real, just depressing.
The only reason you don't actually fight against the tyrants is because you believe you have a choice. At least in a monarchy, like, you don't have a say, and so when things are bad...
Hey, it's his fault. It's her fault.
But democracy, oh, well, we'll vote for him next time. We'll change the system. We'll do something. Like, if things are bad, well, I'll just vote. It's like letting the pressure valve off of a system instead of it letting it boil over.
Every 4 years, we just cool off. We're like, okay, I did the thing.
I voted. I set for change. Yeah.
Everyone, just watch book stuff.
Voting is cringe. If you actually are informed, you should vote. If you're not informed, don't vote. Everyone tells people to vote. No. If you know you're dumb, if you know you're not informed, don't vote.
Are you voting?
On some things.
Yeah, okay.
No, I've actually done that. Several times before, I'm like, I'm not informed on this.
And don't.
I don't vote because I shouldn't vote.
Any book thing, we're voting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm very much.
We know the romanticy genre at this point. We have authority.
We are informed. We're two books in and I got a lock. A finger on the pulse of this whole thing.
We have this such cognitive dissonance. We're the Dunning-Kruger effect. We are peak Dunning-Kruger or we think we know so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get there.
That's everyone.
So that progress portion with you're talking about set coming in. Mm-hmm. And whole democracy is cringe stuff. And Penrod was the other character who ended up actually being king. But you see Ellen get deposed, him trying to get back, the politicking a bit, Set coming in, the fights happening, and then eventually this all leads up to two armies outside, Set's leaving, the Kallus coming in. So the Kolas coming in. We get attacked by Streff's army first. their army attacks. And at, oh, sorry.
No.
No, they get the Kolos attack first. And then Streff's army comes in to, you know, they're waiting behind the background to pick up the scraps.
And, you know, Streff twirling his mustache going like, oh, yes, let the Kolos just slaughter the people because, you know, they deserved it. They didn't accept me as their leader. So let them all die.
Yeah, essentially. And
that cost him, if he didn't do that, he would have had a shot of actually taking the
winning. Yes. Yeah. What did you think about the payoff of that, how that all came to its conclusion?
Enjoyable. That, you know, Vin just took the Kolos army under control and then killed Straff first. Just leaped ahead of the whole army, gigantic Kolos sword, and bisected him and then moved on.
Yeah.
And he just dies. It's great. It was enjoyable.
Yeah. I think the ending there with her fight scenes, I guess, our first slight disagreement, because cool. I guess the armies coming together was like cool,
satisfying,
moment.
But nice. Not. I understand it's very different from you killing the Lord Ruler. It's exciting. It's tense. There's huge stakes where you know she's gonna win, and she just mops the floor with them.
Yeah.
The more enjoyable factor is when she's won. She's got all these. She's got Set, and she has Straff's second in command. And then all of the other nobles. Mm-hmm. And it says, you're going to bow to Elend. And then kind of having a little bit, like, they've gotten a little too used to democracy. And going, well, what if we don't? Instead, trying to be, you know, cute about it. And it's like, then I'll kill you all. I'm done with all of this. You guys sold out the city, tried to sell it out to Straff. All of this destruction is basically on you guys. So fall in line or die. That was satisfying.
Choice is yours.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, take power and use it for good.
This has got to be your new favorite book of all time. And that's all I'm hearing, is it constantly goes to this theme that you're just loving.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that ending to that, I thought for that whole plot line, the Lucidel, I guess we can consider our A story, our A plot, because that is what's the overarching, the problem that all the characters are going through. All the other stuff is in the background. That's just as important, especially the well, which we'll get into. But this was, as the progress went, as the story went, had the most twists and turns, Ellen being disposed, and then
deposed,
home deposed. So having...
Despot would be, you know, that's...
A king, yeah.
You know, the negative ruler type.
Yeah, thing, yeah. Yes. So yeah. Having him deposed, and then having Set come in and cause, oh, now what's going to happen when Set's in here? Oh, now what happens when Vin has to leave and the army's going to be attacking, and how are they going to survive in the actual battle? So the progress portion of that was pretty cool. I think of all the story arcs, while we had the mystery in the background with the Chondra, and while we had Zane and that in the background, I was definitely most invested in, hey, the city stuff of those three.
Yeah, definitely.
Likewise for you.
Same thing here.
Then when it comes to the last portion, the, well, Ascension itself, you said on your reread from the get-go, you're going, oh, okay, I had to know this mystery. How did I miss this the whole time?
Yeah, that, basically.
How do you feel?
I still enjoyed it.
Because
I remember from my first read through that it fooled me.
Yep.
But on the reread, I enjoyed all the little clues. Maybe leading on a bit more heavy-handed. Where I compare these, the two recent things I've reread. I don't reread a lot of books. Not normally. But Wheel of Time, I'm rereading with Digger Dan. If you want to check out our reviews, we're going through the whole series on that channel.
What are you guys on?
You're
now
a quitter.
Never mind. I didn't ask that. Move on. But what are you guys on? Five? Five, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Point being,
yeah,
is that whole series, like on a reread, there are clues and really, really subtle Easter eggs for what's to come, but I don't think it was heavy-handed. It was really well woven into all the little clues to it that you could pick up on it maybe, but you shouldn't be able to. In Mistborn, I feel like I should have gotten it. It felt heavy-handed clues. Everything with the epitaphs in the beginning, with
epigraphs.
Epigraphs, thank you. with Sazed, everything to do with all his readings.
Yeah.
The mists and how they reacted at the Lord Ruler. I should have seen it coming.
So reading it for the first time for me, I didn't. I think toward the end where it was going back and forth between Sazed and Vin and what's going to happen here. I think I started to put the pieces together at some point there as the reveal was going on, but did not catch it early on. Like haven't done a reread, so didn't catch it till way later, until it was actually happening, which I think he wanted you to know toward the end there. He wanted you to know something bad was happening because he was making it more clear. Oh, Sazed was being lied to. As you're being revealed, wait, the words are completely changed. It's only... It changes unless it's on metal itself. So as that's being revealed, you're going, okay, this is more nefarious. What's going on here? With Vin letting loose the whatever it is, the being, the thing, the it, the they, who knows what it is. This, for me, is the most compelling part. Why I'm so excited for book three, I guess world building stuff we'll talk about, but why I'm most excited is forget the Luthadel stuff, forget the Zane stuff, forget even the Condra mystery. The only plot point that really continues after this, other than, of course, Ellen having his arc, the characters having their arcs, the point that continues is the whole well portion.
Yeah.
That's what we're going into the next book. Luthadel's no longer under siege. There's no longer a Condra murder mystery.
There's going to be a guarantee to a conclusion of a tying in from book one of the Lord Ruler with this power. Why did the Lord Ruler take charge? Why did he take the power for himself? Now with this, the Well of Ascension, which has been released, we're going to get a conclusion to it. And it's been set up. We know it's going to be great.
Exactly. And this setup with the Well of Ascension, while we're talking about all these four different plot lines, for me, why overall good plot, not the best, but a lot of these, I wasn't super paid off by them, but I'm so curious and invested in, okay, what's going to happen after this? I am down for the story. I am from page one of Mistborn, Final Empire, ready to go and see what unravels after this. So I'm left in a state of, I think there's a lot, as we discussed, I think we talked a lot more negatives than positives with how the plot played out, at least with some things, some issues, some pacing. I know not Levy, second mention for Levy from the Patreon. He was mentioning how he thinks that book two and book three could almost be combined because there's a lot of things that could be condensed. Do you agree with that, having read book three?
Talking with him, I think possibly.
Okay.
It's possible, but I think it would have been rushed. Gotcha. You conceivably could. But I'll have a much clearer opinion on it when I reread book three.
Got it. Okay, then with that being said, do you want to go on to world building?
Yeah, let's go on.
What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
This is one of the highest of 4.25.
4.25 for me as well. Same score.
Magic system still great. The world is really awesome. Love seeing the different factions come through. Everything we've got with Sazed and the history of Luthadel and the Lord Ruler, just get more. More of all the stuff I really like.
Yeah.
However, I do know we were talked about a little bit before of you were looking forward to a bit more explanation and a little bit more details into the magic. You want to explain on that? Like what kind of disappointed you in there?
So I really great world for all the same reasons with everything from book one gets expanded or more mystery. Love all that. I'll start negative then go positive since you asked. So I guess from book one, seeing what the gold did and how you could see other people's past selves or versions that they could be and of yourself. We didn't get that in this book. And I was curious, what's going to happen with that? Instead, we got introduced Duralim, which is cool. I like that you can.
Is it Duralim or Duril? I think it's Duralim.
Duralim. That's it. Yeah, I might be saying it wrong. That we're talking about the same thing. That was cool that you can kind of expunge all your power and then it's gone, but you're able to do something like save Breeze and pop out of there or do something where it added a neat ability that put you in, could get you out of tough spots, but also looked cinematic in a way. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So I didn't mind that. But I was very curious in how the other metals worked. I was super curious in how gold would act in its alloys and that stuff, which book one left me with a ton of mystery and questions going, what is that? Because when Vin was doing that to the Lord Ruler as a possible way to kill the Lord Ruler, I was going, okay, that's not how it's used, but how is it? He had me so hooked on that. So that's just, I haven't been revealed what it is yet. So
gotcha.
And I can't complain that because it's something that's not there other than I'm curious to see where it goes. I guess my biggest complaint with Action P with one thing here. Then I'm going to praise it for the rest of this time. I promise.
All right, good.
So my one question to you, because I'm curious if you felt the same. I wasn't super sold on this, on how ATM functioned.
Okay.
Okay, here's the point where I wasn't sold on how Vin overcame Zane with ATM. Where this is how it's explained in the book. So I'll give the paragraph of where I was scratching my head a bit. So Vin is saying about after she killed Zane because he was using ATM, she said this. He showed me what I was going to do. I couldn't change the future, but Zane could. By reacting to my attack before I even knew what I was going to do, he inadvertently showed me the future. I reacted against him, and he tried to block a blow that never came. That let me kill him. Now, my question is more so, like, I guess I looked at ATM itself as seeing what the future would be. And, okay, if this is going to happen, you're able to block that blow, do this. I saw it as a Doctor Strange-esque, you could see one situation that happens. It's not 20 different futures. It's you see the one future, that's what's going to happen, and you could prevent that. That's how powerful it is. It looks like now it's a reaction game back and forth. If Zane blocks the blow that was going to come, but he does the reaction to the blow that's going to come, but you don't do the reaction and you do something else to Zane, it just seemed a bit of a contrived way of reacting to his reaction to what you were going to do, and now you can get him. Takes away from ATM bit, but am I wrong there? Because that's how I'm reading it.
I believe so. Yeah. And the explanation of this is what she did was a smaller version of what just two Mistborns consuming ATM do.
Okay.
Remember what happens when both Mistborns have ATM is you see branching. Like, both of them see all these different times. Why? Because depending on which path you pick, they're going to change. And so then it's just chaos.
Okay.
What happens when one person uses ATM, the other doesn't? Well, because they have no reason to change their mode, like, any thought, there's only one path or two paths, like, maybe one stronger. Like, they may do this, but this is the likelihood.
Right.
They're already swinging. What she did is she turned her one path into two, and she reduced the time frame where he thinks he has a full second to react. Instead, at the last second, she sees what she's about to do. She splits it. And so he does see it coming, but it's now too late. He's already committed in the thrust. That's the degree. So
okay,
she's doing what ATM already does
without using ATM.
And main thing is it's a big surprise.
Yeah.
So if Zane knew that she could do that, it would basically you're too cocky. When you're on ATM, you're just like, yeah, I know what they're going to do.
Yes.
And if they change last second, I can see it coming from way ahead. It was combination of surprise and how ATM exactly works.
That explains it to me. I like that. Okay. Because I was thinking of it incorrectly where when not using ATM, it's almost guaranteed what you're going to do. But I guess that she's creating that other option pathway.
Yeah, basically.
Based on his reaction.
The ATM, if she planned on doing this and she changes her mind, the ATM will see it.
Okay.
At which it does. Zane does see it, but by then it's too late because he changes it.
And then technically, Zane could react to that reaction. What happens when both Mistborns have ATM, it's the react game back and forth.
To the point where no one has an advantage. It's basically more confusing.
It's basically a YouTube page or a TikTok when you're scrolling and just watching videos and reacting to the reaction of the reaction of the reaction.
Yeah.
It's just an endless cycle of content.
Endless doom scroll. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. I like that. And I guess I like that explanation better of I like that it makes sense. More sense now that that's how it happened. I guess I less like ATM now of as a tool. Just okay, I guess it's the last reaction wins for fights, if I'm getting that right. It's just the person who gets it right at the last moment, right?
Basically. But I mean, the main thing is one person has an extended reaction time.
Yeah.
And Vin would have to see that at the very last. She's just better.
Right.
Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. Is she changed. She saw what he was doing at the last. She saw what she was about to do.
Yep.
And continued with it. And the very last second changed the mind based on what. So it It's weird.
I'm totally on board with the explanation. I think for that makes total sense now. I'm totally on board for the explanation. I think for future fight scenes, it'll be interesting how invested I'll be. Because if I'm just going, okay, it's a react game, that's kind of, I know it's, I'm being reductionist about it. I'm interested to see if Sanderson's able to, in the next book, make it so I'm invested in the fight scene.
Sure.
That's what I'm looking to, because the application of the magic's almost more important than the magic itself of, hey, how do you make this cool in this moment? How do you make the world itself, oh, okay, this magic not only just does this, but now see how it's actually practically implemented. So I'll have more of an answer next book to see if it bugged me enough. But okay, that'll help me going forward.
I think a good way to imagine it is when there's no ATM, there's no threads. You see zero threads of the future. You see zero visions. If you're using ATM, you see, if one person's using ATM, you see the one true thread. If you're both people are seeing using ATM, infinite. She was able to split one thread that into basically two and change the thread at the last second. So
gotcha.
That's kind of the
okay. Because besides that, with the world itself, this is the highest category for both of us.
Yeah.
So want to do it.
All let's get praises. All the positives.
All
let's
the,
give
all
it
the
actual
positives
praise.
Out there of I really appreciate still from the continuation of book one, the mists, the Well of Ascension itself, Quan, the history, finding out how that goes down, the Terrace people, the Chandra, throwing a bunch of words at you, the word salad to see what stuck with you. Like all those things.
I actually reread it, so I know all the words now this time.
Yes. So, of that word salad and all those things.
Yeah.
What about this made the world feel real and immersive?
We get everything from book one of The Mystery of the Lord Ruler. We get to dive deeper into that with Sazed and the epigraphs.
Yeah.
We get more about the Chandra, which, again, teased a little bit in book one, and we're given it, but now we get a bit more of where they came from. Not really. We get teased a bit more, but we get more information of what their nature is, what they can do, what's tying them to the contract. We get the history of different areas, Luthadel. We get Set's town, city, basically. We get more about the mists of how the mists have changed now, and they're now killing people in
the
middle
deepness.
Of the night. The deepness. Ooh. So we get all that.
That's what some people call your heart. Deep and dark.
The deep dark.
But yes, all that. And what I love about Sanderson's worlds, Stormlight, still my favorite world of his. But what I love about his worlds is how everything connects in a way. And I feel like book three is going to make this connect even more. But what he's doing here that I hadn't seen as much. Okay, I shouldn't say this. I'll keep it to this book. But what I see in this one is a lot of the history and looking back at the history and mystery of the world. It's looking back to the Lord Ruler, what happened in this Well of Ascension, all of that and its effects on the world. So we talked about this in book one about everyone saying the name Lord Ruler as a curse because that's how ingrained it is in the culture and the ska. And so how that one event in history affects everything else from the Terrace people to the Chandra and how Chandras react to Allomancers. Everything's tied together. So there's no disconnecting thread at all where all of this has a satisfying feel of, okay, every world to every piece of the world that I'm reading, every element here is connected in the grand scheme of things where a way worse world builder can throw some elements at you that kind of are isolated and just doesn't connect to the larger scheme of the world. So for me, everything that I'm going and finding out and finding out new tidbits is going, oh, that's connected to this, which is connected to this, connected. That's what is always so cool about reading this world and going, yeah, let's go. More connections, more Cosmere connections.
Yeah.
He's the goat with that stuff. So when the world with this, maybe we were just being too positive. Why was it a step down from book one from you? What would you say?
One, it's not the first, so it's a retread. We don't get, specifically when it comes to the magic system, it's the same a little bit more, but not a lot.
Yeah.
So
we agree there where the use of the magic.
Yeah,
one explored it a bunch. This one was, it took a little step back in the magic use.
Yeah, okay. I think so.
Got it.
Yeah. Where Deryllium is cool cinematically.
Yep.
But functionally, it just being a more like, yeah, but now
more
she's
putrid.
Stronger.
Yeah.
computer, but bigger. And
you'd agree with me. I'm so curious about the gold stuff. Okay, the past selves. Yeah, and that stuff gets me going.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just the nature of how it works with Furukami is so cool. Like, Furukami is, cooler than...
Feruk chemistry.
Thank you.
Yep. But Furukami does that, yeah.
Is much cooler than... just to learn about and uncover the mysteries about. It's way more interesting than Allomancy. Allomancy is definitely more cinematic, cooler. Like, it has more action fight scenes because it's the metal burning, not the individual. So there's not as much direct downside to Allomancy. But when Seiza's fighting, it's just so cool how he interacts with the world.
Yeah.
It's so much more fun of him dropping into a pit and sucking in his weight. So he just kind of floats down. It's
the uses. As I was mentioning about ATM, one of the things about ATM, the usage of the magic. Mm-hmm. So seeing how that's going to be used in book three. Same thing with Seizid and how Furukami is used in a cool scene. It's almost the concept of the magic can be cool and neat, but then how he can literally make himself weightless to a degree, mm-hmm. and how you do that to flow. Oh, what a cool usage of magic. Yeah. That's the satisfying stuff.
Also, at the very end, I liked how Seizid at the very, very end, his rings got embedded into him and then healed, and then realized like how it was this is another thing the Lord Ruler has kind of influenced even over the Terrace people, is it was seen as dirty and abomination to embed metal into your flesh in the Ferrochemists, like, for some reason. Like, and you go, why? It sounds like a great advantage of it. Basically means Allomancers can't actually affect it, which is a huge negative. And then he realized, like, oh, actually, this worked great. Cool. Oh my god,
neat!
This is really helpful. I get why the Lord Ruler did this.
Yeah.
So, I liked again. I think that's another thing the Lord Ruler pushed onto the.
Right. Also, you bring up that scene. We didn't talk about Marsh at all.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Marsh.
We glossed
at all.
Over Marsh.
I mean, to be fair, he's there in, like, the beginning, and then he's there at the end.
Actually, you did bring up him at the beginning when you were talking about Marsh and why he took he was taking Seizid away from the
He's not
the
there for a lot, but I like that twist at the very end, I think, is teased from his very introduction.
Yes.
And that it makes sense, the through line of him. Yeah.
Which, so, as much as we dogged on the plot, why it still connects at the end and everything does come together.
It's believable. There's nothing there that's... Other than the Zane stuff, everything is very believable. And
it's not actually badly done. No.
Nothing in this is bad.
No. So, going on to pros? Any last tidbit of the world? A little sprinkle of something there.
We talked about it a little bit before.
Go for it.
Before, but I liked the religions, the little tidbits of religions that came from Seizid.
Yeah.
And we just learn a little bit more. I like the one he gave to Ham about how they worship art in and of itself.
Mm.
And that art's beauty is enough of a connection to a god and creator.
Yeah.
Which, to me, I quite like. I'm a firm believer in aestheticism.
Yes. Good aestheticism, though.
Well, that's... Nature's beauty is God. God is beauty. That I go to a Protestant church that's next to a Denny's, and I go, God is never here. And then I look at the Catholic cathedral and go, if God be anywhere, he's there. I see it. I understand. I appreciate stained glass windows. And
that's why you like your purple pros, in a way.
To be fair to all the other religions out there, I've been to the Hagia Sophia. I've been to a couple mosques that have been gorgeous.
But
gorgeous
as Seizid would learn, though, you can't just believe in all of them. You have to choose one, Rich.
I'll stick with Catholics. I like I love Catholic aesthetics. I will plant my flag if I like their aesthetics the most.
They got the opera music and just the when you go in and you listen to the echoes off the walls of a cathedral and the big huge organs playing a beautiful.
Now I will say there are slight differences. It's a close. I'll stick with the Catholics, but the
close second is Sanderson because he's a Mormon, right? The Mormons are second, of course.
Mormons don't have the aesthetics. sorry, Sanderson.
Hey, Salt Lake is a nice town. I'll give you that. It's a nice city.
Sure, but I would say it's the other.
What are you searching for?
similar to Catholics, but not.
Not Protestant. Orthodox.
Orthodox.
Yep.
I love Orthodox imagery as well. Nice. Their churches are really beautiful. The art that they do, it's great. So it's between Orthodox and Catholics that I love the aesthetics of the most.
So with that's part of the world building here, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
with the – where did that come from? You were going off a tangent. What world aspect did that come from?
The religions that Sazed brings up.
Yes.
All the little stuff he's trying to teach. Yeah. I enjoy seeing the histories.
Also, you're correct. Aesthetics are important. Aesthetics, like, come on. You got to. Why else would we have this bookshelf here? It's aesthetics. It's great.
It's the most important thing.
I also like how Sazed, when he was talking about when Vin and Ellen were getting married and they were asking Sazed about, hey, what religion can you get married? He just gives one that says, yep, this one, you don't need any witnesses. You
this
just
is the
do
quickest
it.
One.
However, caveat, you can't get divorced. There's no legal way.
That's the... Hey, look, if we're picking one, you want the fastest one, okay, we got this, but that does mean that this religion, you can't get divorced. So
it's forever, which is the point of marriage. So
it is the point.
You know?
It kind of takes... Yeah. Oh, well. We'll
next episode to ramble. Next episode to ramble. How to keep a nice maintenance? Or no, I said that completely wrong. How to keep and maintain a marriage?
Why theologically divorce actually isn't a thing?
Why divorce is cringe?
Divorce is cringe.
Kind of have our fingers together. My parents are divorced, and it's cringe.
No, can you imagine? You go up to your parents like, I know you guys divorced, but you know. Technically speaking,
kind of cringe.
Divorce isn't really a thing. Like, that's not, doesn't exist. You can't. According to Catholic theology, once your souls are bonded, there's no theological process to unbond your souls. It's a permanent thing. You guys better just get over it, because you are technically still married in the eyes of God.
I'm not gonna, if there's a show or some movie where a 6-year-old says that to the parents in some movie where they're getting divorced, I that would be so wholesome to get them back together. They look at their kid, they look at each other. You know what?
We may hate each other, but theologically, you're right.
Also, we raised a respectable kid, and I think for that reason, we should make this work for another couple years.
Till they go off to college. And then we will still be married, but live in sin.
Okay. Pros.
Pros.
What'd you think of the pros?
It's good. It's real good.
I think 3.5?
I gave it 3.75.
Really good. Okay. I gave it, again, like last book, 3 out of 5 stars. And that's not the snobbery portion. I think Stormlight Prose is, to me, like a 4.425. I think it's really great prose. This one, to me, I think last time we hashed back and forth a little bit of what we thought about the prose. Do you have same thoughts as last book?
Basically. I see some difference between this and Stormlight.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a large difference. I think prose-wise...
That's fair.
Stormlight is better, but not by much. Versus something like Emperor's Soul, I think his prose is way better.
His prose and their show good too.
It's fantastic. Yeah. It is amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I have very little thoughts about it, other than sometimes now seeing the twists ahead of time on a reread, I thought some of it was maybe heavy-handed, but that was just a feeling, and only from a reread standpoint. That maybe that's plot. Don't know if that really should fall into prose.
Right.
But everything else, well described. I got great imagery. Action was fun to see. The dialogue between characters was good. So
I think as from book one, it had better dialogue in this book. I think my general complaint still is I think it's very serviceable, super easy to read. Still my biggest complaint is more dialogue stuff. Where book one, the Ellen Vin stuff in book one was my biggest disappointment prose-wise. This one didn't have as much of that. There was still one scene there.
So Ellen and Vin weren't talking that often.
No, they weren't. But in those lull moments, I guess this is just a me thing of the kind of scene, whether you find it more cringy or you find it better as a love story. Or there was a scene where she had makeup on and no kissing because she had the makeup on and Ellen was trying to kiss her and that back and forth was... I guess cute. To me, if I'm being fair, it's not bad. To me, I'm just going, oh, okay, all right.
Hey, as far as romances go with Sanderson, he is a hit or miss. I think Vin and Ellen Durrett is an actual hit.
But, I mean, they're no Zayden and Violet. They're no Fourth Wing. Come on, though.
Give me Ellen and Vin any day over fucking Zayden. God damn.
I guess I have one line here to bring up of something that keeps the prose more average for me. Here's a two-sentence line of something from the book. So there's a line like this where it says, Vin watched quietly as Zane sputtered, blood coming from his lips. She watched cautiously. A knife to the throat should have been enough to kill even a misborn, but sometimes pewter could let one do awesome things. Right? So kind of that way of Vin saying, can do awesome things with it. You know, more colloquial kind of very...
Was Zane using... His awesomeness?
It reminded me a little bit of Lyft.
A little bit.
Where the reason it works for Lyft is because the awesomeness is part of her character and her dialogue.
She's just a cute kid that is weird. She's
overhated. She's overhated.
Oh, yeah. I do not get the hate. She is my favorite Stormlight. Lyft is the best Stormlight character.
Put Lyft in the cathedral. Rich might bust. he's gonna convert. He is going full throttle.
Oh god! No, I love Vin's character. She is so much fun on page, great levity, and I like the depth to her character. Of the more we get from it, it's compelling.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now I think I messed with the recording thing. Hopefully this is still working. Otherwise, I think we're good. We're still good. With that being said, Rich. Mm-hmm. Book three, I'm very excited for book three.
Yeah.
I think as excited for book three as I was for like a Dungeon Crawler book coming next. Like I'm ready. I'm for Dungeon Crawler book 7, we're looking forward to, right?
Yeah.
I'm equally excited for that and to read this next book. And hey, this next book's out, so I'm excited. I get to do it right now. Actually, as soon as the video's over, I should read Name of the Wind, so I can't start book three yet.
Yeah.
We're doing Name of the Wind. I don't know if that's already out there by this point. We'll see. Mm. We'd probably let them know by now because this video will be out there some weeks from now.
It's probably been announced. Yeah. But
do you have any farewell to the audience?
Let's see. If you gotten to the end of this video and you liked it, and you agreed with me, only me, and not Austin here, you know, the Sanderson hater, comment down below, democracy is cringe, because that was the message of this book. It's great. Go out and not vote.
This one time, I will say, you know what? That comment down below makes sense for this book.
Yeah, it does.
So, you know what? You get to have your rant.
Good.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
See you next episode.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.